Tonight, there is one additional rule. Normally, I'm not a rules guy. Just to remind you, the rules here, sleeping is great, talking, not so much. Drinking is fantastic, eating, not so much. Tonight, there's a third rule. No one leaves early. Only time of the year, only share of the year, no one can walk out, because if you don't stay for the end, it may sound like kfira. See, gotta stay for the end. Okay. No one leaves. Okay. Seriously. We are now starting the history of one of the greatest men to ever live, Avraham Avinu. We've had two parshios where we've dipped into certain important issues, more impressive people, less impressive people. This is the first Jew, the first chosen person, the first one to discover Hashem, the first person to move to Eretz Yisrael, Akedas Yitzchak. And it's a good opportunity to think about in general, trying to find a balance between two extreme ways of reading our Avos and Imos. If you read our Avos and Imos as if they're your best friends, and you apply the standards that you encounter through our struggles and our ups and downs in our lives, it's not just morally questionable, it's intellectually bankrupt. These were great, great human beings who didn't just live life far, far beyond our own achievements and levels. They led different types of lives. Their lives were prophetic. When Avram visited Shechem, when I visit Shechem, I see mountains. I think about history. I think about Avram saw prophecies unfolding and participated in those prophecies in Nevuos. Avram, according to the Ramban, when I say Avram, the Avos, the Imos, they were part of the Maisa Merkava. They lived metaphysical lives. They didn't just occupy the world we lived in. They carried us at Hashem Shechem in this world. So all their experiences were bilayered, were striated. So When I speak to my neighbor, I'm living it psychologically, emotionally, legally, personally. They were living so many different ones, just that they were living the type of life that I was living, just more religious and more devoted. Their lives were composed of different layers of meaning. And then we have to be very, very careful about just simply treating any of the people in Tanakh, but certainly the Avos and the Imos, with the same standards and yardsticks you treat yourself and other people. As I said before, it's not just a religious statement, that's an intellectual statement. On the other hand, if you believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be inspired by their lives and to grow from their lives and to model our own lives after their lives and to be challenged and reinforced, then Masai Yagia, Masai the Masai Vosai, when will my behavior at any point reach their levels? Then I have to treat them as people who went through struggles, faced adversity, met with failure, setbacks, errors, overcame their failures. How can I overcome my own failures, even though my failures are much more magnified than their failures? So beware of two different extreme readings. One reading which treats them as your average human beings, or being, and one which treats them as angels who have absolutely no relevance to human life. And here's a phrase if you want to try to capture that middle stage, and tonight I'll help you capture it by reading Avram. They were superhumans. They may not have been superhuman like angels, although part of them lived in celestial spheres and understood celestial truths, but they were superhumans. And be careful about how you treat them. And in general, as you'll see tonight, that's why I can't leave tonight. In general, here are two guidelines to help you read the Avos. Three guidelines. First of all, follow the trail of Chazal and of the Mefarshim. The Rosh HaTorah are going to wake up one morning and say, oh yeah, that was a chait. That was a... That again. It's not just chutzpahdik, heretical, audacious. And it's just, it's wrong, because I'm using the yardsticks for what I think is or isn't a chait in my world. But if the Ramban says it, or the Gemara says it, then I have to take it and read it and understand it. And even if it's a bit hyperbolic, and even as we'll see some hyperbole tonight, but there is something there if Chazal are noting it. So that's number one. Follow Chazal, follow the Mefarshim. Don't just open up a Tanakh. Where are you going?
I'm just going.
don't, I mean, very, very, very police state. This is a police state tonight. And then democracy, you know, it's election. This is martial law, okay? No one leaves. Okay? This is my form of democracy. Okay? Number one. Number two, there is a difference, though, between saying that Avraham sinned and saying that Avraham may have made an error. A sin is a religious or moral mistake. And that means you're transgressing clear moral boundaries, clear will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But then there are errors in judgment because we're forced to make judgment calls our whole life. Miscues, missed opportunities. And there you're much more solid ground. Finally, as you'll see tonight, this type of reading should be towards a purpose, not just to nitpick and to prove, because ultimately many people who read the Avos, I don't want to say critical, but just critically, open-mindedly, it's with a sense that if I could break them down to size, then, well, they also sin, so I can exempt myself from achievement, from growth, from ambition. Because after all, I've met his fat. I talk during Chazaras Hashas. I cheat on my income taxes. I don't really learn Torah. And Avram also. So I'm just like Avram. Very often there's an agenda to acquit yourself from Avodas Hashem and Yirat Shamayim. If your agenda is more Yirat Shamayim, how can I read Avram's life, understand some of the trials he went through, but see how he developed and overcame them and became a better of the Hashem, more complete, and I want to go on that journey, and I want to be a more perfect Moshe, I want to be a more perfect Misha, I want to be a more perfect Masha, I want to be more perfect in all of them. So then there's an agenda of Yirat Shamayim, and Hashem, he's not writing the Torah to exempt you from your Shemayim. He's writing the Torah to give you pathways for growth. So you can understand, well, you know what, Avram had similar, at least structurally, similar challenges. The challenges may be different layers, but they're similar to mine. And then we try to identify with what Avram went through. You identify with the Avos. That was one of the major changes. One of the major changes when I came to Eretz Yisrael is the Avos stopped being these goat herdsmen in sandals that I just had no clue about. And I really started to deeply identify. Here I am living 10 miles away from my grandparents in their tomb, then 10 miles away from Rachel, in the land that they lived in, and how does that entire Sefer Bereishis come to life? The Sefer Bereishis came to life. Sefer Bereishis was like these old scrolls in the Qumran caves, and the Sadducees, and the Pharisees, and the Hadducees, and all these Ducees, and I don't even know where they were. All these Ducee people were reading, and like, well, who am I? Or writing scrolls, and now all of a sudden, these aren't yellow scrolls. This is my biography, my ancestors, they have expectations of me. I'm back in their land. I want them to be proud of me. I'm willing to face challenges that they faced. So how do you make Bereishis come alive? Those are your three guidelines. Distinguish between, if you're talking about a chait, I would never dare say that word without it being in a Gemara or in a Ramban or in a Chizkuni or in a, number one. I have greater shoulders than myself, these people. Tanayim, Amorayim, Mefarshim. Number two, I do feel that if I'm reading, Hashem wants me to read and say, well, maybe you could have chosen otherwise in that context. And we'll read Avram tonight. And number three is so that we can better understand how he overcomes them because the Torah is trying to highlight. Obviously, Avram is not an ambivalent character. Torah doesn't mean to cast. Torah wants us to heroicize Avram, wants us to look up to him, wants us to put him on a pedestal. If I can put him on a better pedestal, at least a more relevant pedestal, if I understand how he went from one person to another person. So given that backdrop, and given the fact that no one's going anywhere, okay, let's read Avram. You can read Lech Lecha one of two ways. One way is, that's the easy way, look how much Avram accomplishes. And he really does. He listens to Hashem, turns his back on his family, culture, homeland, moves to Israel, faces uncertainty as soon as he gets there, has to fend off the pyros who basically want to kidnap and hijack his wife, is conciliatory to Lot, rescues his nephew when he gets entangled, basically, what's the word I'm looking for? Suppresses a world war, represses a world war in the conflagration, believes in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, takes an Egyptian midwife, so that he can have a child, dispatches her when she starts to exploit Sarah, and ultimately receives Hashem's bris. And that's a pretty good resume. You're looking for a job, it's a pretty good resume. But then you can also read the Parsha and say, yeah, but if you look carefully, may be impressive unless the expectations are for more. So if I would be plunged into Lech Lecha, let's say it would be me in Lech Lecha, wow, he really did a lot. That's impressive. Leaves his country, conciliatory, solves world peace. For me, I get the Nobel Prize. But the Nobel Prize is graded on a curve. For Avram, the curve and the bar is higher. And if you look carefully, there may be expectations that he doesn't always meet because the expectations are so lofty, because he's meant to be someone so much greater. And let's see five or six little snapshots and honestly ask ourselves whether these things are representative of a pattern. And then, of course, since no one's leaving, what's the point? So I want to prove that Avram was Ezra, you can't, okay. You have to listen to the first part of Shir. This is not a partial Shir. No, seriously, it's a... What? Yeah, you can come in. What? Yeah, okay, I'll send it. You come on in, but it's one shiur. You can't leave. This is one whole process, okay? But you have to promise me to listen to the first 25 minutes, okay? Because
is it recorded?
Yes, this is the one shiur that's one integrated unit. Okay, so let's read number one. Number one, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends Avram to Eretz Yisrael. I made a table. Shem sends her sheets in the back. Shem sends Avram to Eretz Yisrael. And as soon as he gets there, we don't know how long it took, but textually, as soon as he gets there, there's a famine. Now, famines in Tanakh and Eretz Yisrael are trials. They're testing your mettle. They're testing your commitment. They're testing your faith. They're testing your commitment to Eretz Yisrael, to the land Hashem wants you to live in. Well, if you were writing Lech Lecha, what would the conclusion be? Avram bangs his fist on the table and says, we're not leaving. This is my land, and whatever it takes, I'm staying. I lived through that scenario. I was here in the twos. 2001, 2002, 2003, and there was a lot of terror, and it was a very dark time, and some people left, and some people moved out of the Gush, and no one judges anyone, but those of us who stayed with a sense, we're not budging, because this is a historical mandate, and it's larger than ourselves and larger than life, and you'd expect that. I lived through that, so I would expect that of the great Avraham. And you could justify the decision, I'm pragmatic, because there's not enough food, and ultimately, the end of Sefer Bereishis bears out and ratifies that decision. But wouldn't you, just be honest, wouldn't you, if you were told that this is the first chapter of Avram's life in Israel, you'd say, and then he makes a stand and sticks to his guns and toughs it out because this is the faith. Now, in line with what I said before, look at the Ramban. The Ramban says, Veda. Ki Avram Avinu chata chet gadol. Okay, so I'm chasma, I would never say it, but the Ramban says, and he uses the word chata chet gadol. We'll see the first part of the Ramban, but look at the second part. Gam yitzias amin haaretz, his decision to leave Eretz Yisrael. Shenitztav ola betchila. He was commanded to move there. Ibnei harav? Because there's a famine? Say, I'll eat some pasta instead of steak. So you'll scrounge around, you'll scavenge for food. Avon asher chata. Again, listen to the Ramban's lashon. Ki halokim berav yifdenim imavis. Because you have to trust HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem will provide the land that he sent you to. Hashem didn't send you to Yisrael to die. Hashem sent you to Yisrael to live and to fulfill the nevuas and the brachos. So is it a... Again, the Ramban calls it a chet. I'm not even comfortable calling it a chet even when the Ramban calls it a chet. Because it's an even decision. Food, faith, faith, food. You have to find some way to balance those two, and he needs to meet his family. But again, you and I would be given a pass for that decision. You have to wonder whether, why the Torah, question is why the Torah presents it this way. What is Hashem's message to us? And that can only clarify through the entire shir. Okay, next story. They're in Mitzray. It's a crisis. They're promiscuous. Any woman they see, they grab. It's a sad story, but it makes you realize why Hashem needs one nation to accept the Torah, because everywhere Avram travels, they're sexually overdosed. They can't keep their hands off women. So Hashem has to create a different world, and Avram will create that world. So it's not his fault. You land in the middle of, fill in the blanks, in the middle of a pornographic scene. Are there other solutions other than lying about your wife's identity and possibly entangling a man who may, because of his position and his station, have avoided, so look, at least for looks, I'm para, I can't really be seen taking a married woman, even though I want her, and he may have legitimate claims. It doesn't, the optics are off. Remember, this is, let me put it to you differently. This is Avraham's debut. This is his debut moment. He's the Avraham Goyim, not yet, but he's meant to be. He has a message for humanity. People will be drawn in his inspiration. They'll follow his preaching. They'll discover Hashem. It's like, imagine Avram rolling up his sleeves. This is my first chance to do it. I'm in Mitzrayim. They can all come listen to my shiur. They can all sit and be inspired and put it up on Y.U. Torah. It's great. And the first encounter goes sideways. The first encounter, and you can find again, I'm not here to read that section, that paragraph with you carefully, but in the end of the day, Avram lies, Paro gets entangled, Avram can say, she's my sister. And what's the outcome of that first encounter? That first moment to be Makara people? Get out by midnight. Don't stay another moment. Look at the last pasuk, Vayitzav alav Paro nashim, Vayishalchu osel v'yesishto v'yiskol ha'shila. Get out. This is the inverse of what we'd expect. We'd expect Avram to be a hero, lauded, applauded, recognized, paparazzi. Avram's here. Give us your truth. Tell us your, teach us your ways. In that first moment, because of his lie, and again, going back to the Ramban, look back at the Ramban in box number one, V'daki Avram Avinu chet chata gadol bishgaga. He calls it a chet bishgaga. So again, he's not mendacious. It's not a conniving chet. Shehevi ishto atzadekes b'michshol avam. Keep in mind, guys, it's not just Paro who's being, quote-unquote, I don't say victimized, chas v'shalom, because that makes it sound mendacious and exploitative, but who's put into a difficult situation because of Avram's decision or solution. It's Sarai. She's in the firing range. And just listen to the way he speaks. Imri na achosiat l'man yitav li b'avurech. I want you to tell everyone you're my sister so that I can benefit. Now, there are many, many layers to understanding that pasuk, but I think we can all agree this is not the way we expected Avram's great career to begin. And so I'm sorry, we just said before, no chewing, so I'm sorry to pile on you. No chewing gum.
Oh,
okay. No problem. Okay, so this is the second snapshot of Avram. The second time that on an even playing field, we could very, very easily justify, we could very easily validate, but in the Avram scale, who's supposed to be the Avraham Ongayim, who's supposed to be stout in his faith, he leaves Eretz Yisrael, lies to Paro, exposes Sarah to potential abuse, molestation, entangles Paro, and then is quickly, quickly evicted on the first plane out from Egypt. Okay, so now it's pretty clear that Avraham's agenda of bringing people into the fold isn't immediately successful. But now what happens? There's a bit of a bickering between the shepherds, and they're bickering over land and over grazing rights because there are too many sheep and cattle. Guys, this is an overpopulated world. This is a small world. This isn't 10 million people living in Hong Kong. This is people living in tents strewn across. There are ways to solve problems. You eat on Tuesday, we eat on Wednesday. Gas rationing. You guys probably never saw gas rationing. Yom Kippur War, 73. I remember gas rationing. Odd number, if the odd number was there, it's 13th of the month. If your license plate ended with an odd number, you can get gas. If not, you couldn't get gas. So we'll find a solution. And immediately, now Avram is not just failing or unable to bring people in. Now he's losing someone. Now he's hemorrhaging people from his own clan. This is the wrong direction. You're running the wrong way. You should be running to get more people in, to draw them in, and now he loses his nephew. Let's say, I don't know, just looking at you, Sammy, just because you're sitting in the segment. Sammy comes over to me and says, Rabbi Tarragon, I want to talk to you. I want to ask you advice. And finally, we talk it out. And Sammy says, I just got to be honest with you. I'm just not happy here in Yeshiva. It's not going well for me. And I'll sit there and make recommendations about how to improve it. But let's say Sammy is steadfast, says, Rabbi, I decided I'm going to Karen Biafra. I'll be a happy camper. You learn here, you learn there. But let's say the conversation goes differently. And Sammy says, Rabbi, I'm not so happy here. I'm thinking of spending a year in Vegas gambling, drinking, alcoholing. That's what I'm doing my year. I'm getting on the train tracks, Sammy. That's a train tracks moment for me. You know, I'm going to the man on that one. It's not between learning here or learning in the other yeshiva. This is between. Where is Slope going? He's not going to the other yeshiva. Avram knows where he's going. He's going to Stone. And just in case you're not paying attention, oh, by the way, oh, you think Stone were such great tzaddikim and they only turned in Parshas Vayera? Lotus choosing Stone. Pasuk Yud Gimel, box 3. The Anshei Stone, Ra'im V'chata'im, Lashem Mi'od. Avram, train tracks time. You get down on train tracks and you say, over my dead body. That's train tracks time. This is your nephew, and he's choosing Las Vegas. He's not choosing the other yeshiva. And he just lets him go. You go left, I'll go right. You go right, I'll go left. Is this a chait? No one calls it a chait, but there are two ways to read Lech Lecha. The way that Ezra's going to listen to when he listened to the first part of the year, stacking all the accomplishments. And then the rating Avram on an Avram curve, or Avram bar, and it seems as if this repeats itself, that all those expectations are not all met. Some of them are met, but not all met. And now a World War Zero breaks out. Four kings, five kings, allies, and the Axis. Gedol Omer is the Axis. The other kings, who's the no names, but presumably Stom and Amora, they are the allies. This is a great moment, Avram, for you to be the pacifist, for you to be Switzerland. You to step in, convene everyone for a worldwide summit and cool everyone's engine, stop the bloodshed. It's 13 years, people are dying, blood is running through ancient Mesopotamia. And it is a really good chance for you to be the Alpha Manga, and that's your job, right? To bring peace to the world around you. And I apologize to all of the non-Americans in the room, but I'll explain to you in a minute. And Avram decides to go all Monroe Doctrine. James Monroe was an American president who introduced the Monroe Doctrine. It was an extremely, extremely selfish move, but it led to America being a superpower. Because when Europe bled to death for about 150 years, America was on the sidelines. So the reason that Europe, was paused because they fought two wars and they fought all these skirmishes, and America decided we're not, again, you could debate its merits or not. Obviously, I'm being very colorful about it here. But at a certain point, isolationism is immoral. When people are dying, you have to become involved. There's not a comment about the Monroe Doctrine. It's a comment about sometimes your responsibility is to end suffering and to fight injustice. And if you, Kadosh Baruch Hu equipped you with the resources to say differently, Baruch Hashem, in the last century, and still to this point, America has taken that responsibility. Being the last remaining superpower, America feels a moral responsibility to stand for justice, to stand for peace, to try to broker peace, to try to uproot evil. And the only time that Avram gets involved is when his nephew gets captured. Now he decides to gather the cavalry and redeem and liberate Lot. So again, this is the fourth time we've seen Avram. And again, there's a flip side to all these stories, that Avram was so successful, but it's not. If you were scripting Avram, how would you script the 4 or 5 kings war? There's a war, and Avram steps in, right? And he facilitates peace. He mediates. He saves his nephew, and that ends the war. Because, and in some ways, it's a little bit off, because he had the potential. It was so quick. He came and saved Lot, and what about all the people that died beforehand? Until he saved Lot. Okay, so now the war has ended, and this is really interesting. He's a preacher. He's a converter. That's his job. And when you convert people, you convert them from paganism or from immoral lives. So let's play that same storyline out again, but different. Send me your friend, and Karen B. Avner calls me. Says, Rabbi, I want to transfer to Gush. My inclination is speak to your Rebbeim. You already made a commitment there. See if you can work it out there. But your friend from Las Vegas calls me and says, Rabbi, I made a decision. Given up the casino life. I'm joining the world of Torah. I'm switching teams. Yeah, I mean, maybe not Gush, but come. I'll call out my friend and the other. I don't know. We'll work it out. Of course, come. Yes. I'll ask Ellie. Ellie will say no. I'll find another. We'll do it. Melech Stone gift wraps converts to Avram. At this point, Avram's a rock star because he saved the world. One word from him and everyone will jump. He lifts his finger, everyone will follow. He can make a big wave. Everyone's going to make a wave because he saved everyone's life. I mean, this is a person whose popularity is sky high. Cult figure. The Einstein who ended the war. FDR. National heroes. He's got influence right now. And the Melech Sdom offers him people, offers him, take my people and bring them into your entourage. And he says no. Now remember, the people who don't enter the Kanfei HaShchina in Lech Lecha become incinerated under sulfuric ash in Vayera. Just register that. They're not moving for 1 year. They're not moving laterally. They're moving from a potential grave and fiery furnace to, Avram doesn't know that yet, but still, you know, they're going back to stone. And here the Gemara now already starts to comment. Source number 4, box 4. Amar b'yavo, Amar r'v'lazar m'p'neima, nenash Avram avinu v'nishtabdu banav l'mitzrayim masayim v'asr shana. Now here's a hyperbole, but why did we go to Golis and Mitzrayim for 210 years of hard labor? Because Avram refused to admit these people as potential monotheists. Because he missed this opportunity. Again, this is not called a chait, because it's a passive, it's omission, not commission. There's nothing, he didn't do anything, he didn't move out of Israel. But here's a chance, it's all bow-tied, it's all wrapped up, it comes with a wrapper. I just pull open the wrapper. So I'm sure there are reasons, and very noble reasons, but this isn't what our minds and our imaginations expect of Avram. Then the next story, it starts to get even more internal. Achar ha-devar ma'ila, source number 5, ha-devar Hashem al Avram b'machzeh lemor, al tira Avram anochim again lecha, don't worry, I'm going to protect you. I know you feel vulnerable after those wars. And Avram says, I know you're going to protect me, Hashem, but it's not worth anything unless I have a successor. But Yomer Avram Hashem Elokim Mati Tenli. Okay, you could read this pasuk reverentially. You could read the pasuk while you say Mati Tenli. But the next couple of psukim, Vine Devar Hashem Elav Lemar Lo Yirash Chazeh. Don't worry, it's not Eliezer. It's not your servants. Kiyem, turn the page. Here there's a direct frontal promise. You will have a child. Hashem says, you will have a child. And what does Avram say? Hashem takes him outside, look at the stars, the famous stars, this is the first stars. Vayomer Hashem Elokim Bama Eda Ki Irashena. Those four words are interpreted many, 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 many different ways. And if you want to take a nice project, maybe take a look at them in the Mefarshim. But you can't get away from the sense that Hashem is saying, don't worry, and Avram is saying, I'm still worried. It's hard to avoid something like that. And again, the only reason I'm saying this is because a great, 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 great man named Shmuel, the Amara Shmuel, he said it. Source number 5, box, Shmuel says, why did we go to Mitzrayim? It may shehifriz amidos of Shalom Kadosh Baruch Hu. Because Avram, again, there's so many ways to interpret the words in the Torah and the words of Shmuel, but this wasn't Avram just saying, whatever you say, HaKadosh Baruch, I'm fine, I'm good. And then the last scene, also, Avram has a wife, Hagar. Hagar and Sarah don't get along, famously, can't play together in the sandbox. It's all good, it happens. Hagar has to be dispatched. History mandates it because at some point Hagar's child cannot live with Yitzchak, and this episode will recur. But again, it's the way. Vayomer Avram el Sarai, hine shifchaseich biyadech, asila hatov b'enayich. Remember in camp, Mark, you hold Yoni. I'll take him. Hold him tight. Let's team up. Let's bully him. You hold Yonia. Asila, do whatever you want to Hagar. Vatianea Sarai. These are harsh words. Sarai starts to torture, verbal, whatever. There's pain that this Hagar feels from Sarai, and the pain comes after Avram says, Asila tov b'inayich. Now again, this has to be done. Someone's got, I don't say take out the garbage as a human being, this has to be done. Someone's got to, some things are not fun, they're not exquisite, they're not elegant, you got to get your hands dirty and do it, trust me. But sometimes even when you're taking out the garbage, proverbially, there's a way to do it. Even when you have to take difficult actions, there's human currency, human life, and human emotions. And some of you may one day be in a position you have to fire someone. Rosh Hashanah is never in that position. I'm not really in charge of anything. But I'm in charge sometimes of telling boys or families who can't come to the yeshiva. It's really hard for me. It's really, really hard. I think most of you got it. Just couldn't pull the trigger. It's really hard, but I'll make a call and I'll try my best and I'll try. Sometimes it works. Sometimes I get some kickback and I feel like I owe. I spend more time on the boys that don't get into the yeshiva and boys that get into the yeshiva. Really. More time trying to make sure that I say things appropriately and soft landing, because I feel like the same shemayim. That's just as important. Boy, I'll never see again. I'm not going to be in my Talmud. So, as I said before, you could read Parshas Lech Lecha and stack the successes, and you can read Parshas Lech Lecha and realize he's successful, but you can find chinks. You can find creases. The linen is not as smooth as you think. For Avram. For me, I'm cutting my left arm off if I can be Lech Lecha, man. If I can be the man in Lech Lecha, you got my left arm. But Avram isn't me. Now, here's the reason we're saying this. Because if you happen to compare Parshas Vayera to Parshas Lech Lecha, it almost looks like a palindrome. It almost looks symmetrical. It almost looks like you can actually build a table. And almost every miscue, error, chait, is almost in every story that occurs in Lech Lecha, recurs in Vayera, either directly or thematically. But in Vayera, you see a perfect man. You see a man who just aces it, all aces. Every single story, there is a rehabilitation. There's a difference. It's the same story. It's the same. No, it's different. Let's read these six or seven images of Lech Lecha now through the prism of Vayera. And it's astounding, staggering. Remember, Avram travels down to Mitzrayim and he gets embroiled with Paro and he gets caught in a lie. Well, what happens in Vayera? I'm just trying to shut my watch. What happens in Vayera that's parallel to Lech Lecha? What happens in Vayera? What story? Another famine. For this, at this point, Avram doesn't descend to Mitzrayim, but he descends to the coast, up the mountains. We're in the mountains here, so he descends from the mountains to the coast. Avram scratches and say, well, how am I going to get out of this one? Oh, I got a great new idea. Maybe I'll say she's my sister. So the Torah is setting up the exact same scene. And without digging into the details, because we don't have time for the details, one thing I can tell you, the resolution is totally different. Something about the story that we can't have time to prove now, another project for Shabbos, read the two stories carefully. All of a sudden, Avimelech and Avram become besties. All of a sudden, let's sign treaties. Remember, Avram's being shipped out on the first plane? What happens? Vayomer Avram ki amarti rak en yeres and lukim b'makom hazeh. Look at the left part too. Avram actually explains to Avimelech in Lech Lecha, he didn't say a word to Paro. He was stony silent. No, you have to point out to people that sometimes, stop blaming me, stop accusing me. Have you looked at your own population? Have you taken their sexual moral temperature? But lately, it's not about me, it's about you. Look at the society you're building. Ein yiras Hashem b'makom hazeh. And they explain she's also my sister because in ancient Mesopotamia, wives were called sisters. There was a way to call certain wives and multiple wives. One would call a sister. And I've been on the road and I've been facing many, many different challenges. Just reading through the psukim, follow them. I've been traveling. Now, we don't really know what about these three psukim ingratiated Avimelech. All of a sudden, hugs and kisses. Chocolates and roses. Come, Vayomer Avimelech, Sonu Vakar, Avadim Ushvachos, Hine artsi lifanecha, come and stay a few months. Remember Paro? Get out of my country by midnight. Hine artsi, stay a while, wherever you want to live. And I'll give Sarah some money, and Avram davens for Avimelech, and one day they become Baal Bris, and the end of Lech Lecha, and the end of Vayer, excuse me. So we can't roll up our sleeves and find those details, but they're there. And the Avram who creates alienation and disillusion with Paro, and to a degree, Chazal don't really say this, but to a degree, we have to go down to Mitzrayim, not just as a punishment, as the Gemara says in the Dharma, we have unfinished business. Jews going down to Mitzrayim for 210 years is not just for whatever Chazal assigned the blame or fault to, there's unfinished business. If Avram had succeeded in repairing Mitzrayim theologically, morally, we may not have had to go through this Yetzias Mitzrayim experience. We have to redeem the culture of the day, which is Egypt, cradle of civilization. We have to set them on course. Set humanity on course. Remember we talked about Avraham, non-intervention, people are dying, it's just losing low to stone, those two stories together. What happens in Vayera? Now Stone has reached its expiry date. Hashem wants to eliminate them from the earth. And he said, let them burn. They're Rishayim. Not Avram. Avram challenges HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Source number 3. Vayigash Avram Vayomar. Haftis Betzadikim Rasha. Chalil Lecha Pasech Hafei. We say this on Yom Kippur. Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. He challenges divine authority. This is an incredible statement. He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how could you? Divine injustice. How could you have collective punishment? How could you kill? This is great. This is Avram's moral indignation. Avram, with all humility, Anochi Afra Ve'efer, but saying, Kodesh Baruch Hu, that's not who you told me you are. That's not how I want to try to present you to humanity. You're not an angry God. You're not full of vengeance. You're full of rachamim. This is how I'm going to present you. He's shaking. He's trembling. He's desperate. Remember we talked about number 4 where Avram delayed in converting people. It's not like his conversion agenda was so successful, even when it comes gift wrap. All of a sudden, source 4, left of the table, he plants an Eshel in Beersheba, which is the town that ultimately is Avimelech and his towns. There's a lot of cultural exchange in him and Avimelech. Beersheba is in the south. You get it from the coast, you can get it from the mountains. Beersheba is equally accessible. And Chazal said, just quoted Rashi, that Eshel wasn't just the Airbnb. That Eshel was spiritual growth, learning about Hashem. It was a retreat. It was a spiritual retreat. So now Avram's conversion agenda, L'gayir Asa'amim, is in full gear. Full gear. Remember we talked about Avram questioning, will I have children? Will I not have children? Mamayda ki Arashana? Well, that same story repeats in Vayera. What's the counter to Avram questioning Hashem about children in the future in Lech Lecha? What's the counter to that in Vayera? Come on, the Akedah. And Avram has one word in the Akedah, one word to Hashem. What's that one word he says? That's a very silent section. If you read the section, there's a lot of silence. Not that much talking, a lot of doing. What's the one word Hashem tells, what Avram tells Hashem? Hey, Nanny, I'm here. I'm in. I have a son, you promised me he's going to be my child, he beats the cross, and now you're telling me to sacrifice him? I trust you. I'll do it. We'll talk about the Akedah next week. Isn't it odd that every single story of Lech Lecha is inverted in every single story? From the famine and the protection of Sarah, to the intervention, to the conversion of Gerim, to the Emunah Hashem, despite the illogic of it, and then, of course, just in case you're not convinced that Vayera is a repeat of Lech Lecha, remember when Avram dispatches Hagar, and it feels as if Hagar is being exposed to unfair treatment. What happens in Vayera? Not the dispatching of Hagar, but dispatching of Yishmael. So now it's a tag team. it's a doubles match. Not only is Hagar being sent away, but now it's Hagar and Yishmael who have to be sent away, and it's a whole different story. Look at how they are sent away in Vayera, and how they're sent away, as we saw in Lech Lecha. Vayashkem Avram Baboker, he gets up early in the morning. When Avram gets up early in the morning in Vayer, it's for important religious activities, akedas and davenings and sending people off in the right way. Vayikach lachem lechem asmayim, he gives him some chocolate bars, some granola bars, he gives him some water, some bread, some food for the way, some money, you know, stop at a rest stop. Vayitin al hagar sam al shechma, puts it on her shoulder. Mesayeled vayishalcha, he squirts in, he walks him a few miles. Chazal fill in these blanks, I'm quoting Midrashim. Wow. These parshas are so similar, yet they're so different. It's almost as if we're dealing with two different people. It's almost as if the person in Lech Lecha is different from the person in Vayera. Wait a second, he is, isn't he? Who's in Lech Lecha? Who's in Vayera? Because the name change happens right at the intersection, right at the juncture. So our question becomes, as people seeking to be better of the Hashem, how do you go from being Avram, pretty good, to being Avraham, who's perfect? And the answer to that question is, let's see what lies right at the intersection between the two parshas. That's obviously the transition. You transition from Avram to Avraham, based on what happens when your name is changed in between the two parshas. And what is that? Cheat sheet, look at the text. What happens right at the end of Lech Lecha that's responsible for the name change, that obviously transitions Avram great into Avraham perfect? Bris Mila. So now at least we know what we're looking for. We know that there's Avram who is fantastic, we know there's Avraham who is perfect. The Torah is drawing our attention to that by structuring every single story in twos. I'm just making a table so it could be obvious to you. And the transition from great to perfect is Avram to Avraham. And that transition is a bris milah. Now, here's the score. Here's the dope, as we used to say. You can try to be an Oved Hashem one of two ways. One way is when you feel up to it, when you're excited, when you're passionate, when you're prophetic, when you feel zealous, when you feel religious. And that's very important, all those feelings and emotions. Or you could be what's called a sea monster. A sea monster is the C word, commitment, covenant. Let me describe covenant to you. And then you'll understand how it applies to religion. Do not think for a moment that marriage is only romance. Do not think for a moment that marriage is primarily romance. Marriage is a covenant. Let us build a covenant of trust to raise a family, share our finances, care for one another, be honest with each other, share our secrets, build our life together. Now, there better be romance in that, for obvious reasons. Don't go telling me, Rabbi, I love this conversation. Rabbi, should I marry her? She's my best friend, and I don't know. You know, I don't know, we have chemistry, and okay, not a test tube. Don't marry a woman until you're madly in love with her. That shouldn't be the only thing. You're embarking on a life of building together. Well, Rabbi, how do I know if I love her? Say, trust me, if you're asking that question, break up. how do I know? Tell me. How do I know? So I'll tell you what. Don't marry a girl till you cannot have kavana during Shemona Esrei. But I already don't have kavana. It's fine. I'm all good. Get married tomorrow. Promise me, everyone in this room, please promise me, you will not get married until you don't have kavana during Shemona Esrei, because you can't stop thinking about it. Please promise me that one. Because you'll have I'm not giving anyone guarantees for better marriages, but it will help. But always a covenant. And sometimes in romance, and sometimes you bicker, and sometimes you're in different places, and you're on, and she's off, and he's here, and you're there. But you stick to it. And you act in ways that are loyal to this covenant and partnership that you've built, and you don't step outside, even though at certain points you, well, when I say step outside, I mean cheat, I mean not act properly. Can you build a bris with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Can you take, in Lech Lecha, Avram has nevuah, havtacha, excitement, mizbeach, Eretz Yisrael, but you know what? Human emotions fluctuate. They rise and they fall, and they're there and they disappear. And if your religion is based on when you feel religious, when you don't feel religious, when you're excited, when you're not excited, you'll rise and you'll fall, you'll rise and you'll fall, you'll rise and you'll fall. But if it's based on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm not going anywhere, you're not going anywhere, we're stuck with each other. I'm using coarse terminology, obviously. It gives you confidence. In case you had a bad day, so tomorrow you'll make it up. No one's going anywhere. No fire sales. No one's leaving. No one's getting traded. Jim isn't trading us. We're not trading HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We had a bad day. Okay, keep on. Everything's going to be melodramatic. Oh, bad day. Oh, my goodness. The sky's falling. Jim's going to leave me. I'm going to leave Hashem. Chas v'shalom. It's a bris on a personal level. It's a bris on history. There are times in history the Jewish people did not deserve HaKadosh Baruch Hu's love. And he loved us anyway. And quite frankly, listen carefully to what I'm about to say. There were times in history Hashem didn't deserve our love. And we love him anyway. Now what I mean is, of course, Hashem always deserves our love in ways that we just don't always know. But to the human eye, if we just have to rank it in human eyes, like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how could the Holocaust happen? We've been so faithful for 1800 years. We're struggling to get back to Eretz Yisrael. We've built yeshivas in Europe. We're so faithful. And then a Holocaust, there's no answer. There's no answer to that. You can't. Don't simplify. Don't trivialize the lie, 6 million lies, by giving panic. There's no answer to that question. It doesn't exist. But you know what? He said, HaKadosh Baruch, I don't understand. I just love you anyway. I love you. Love at a certain point goes beyond logic. It goes beyond rationalization. You love someone for reasons. When you ask someone, why do you love your wife? No, A, B, C, D, X to the fourth, B to the second. It's not a math form. You love something, and there's no way to explain it. I hate chocolate ice cream. I love vanilla ice cream. I can't explain it to you. And you know what? I can understand that other people love chocolate. It's fine. It's all good. I just love it. That's my belly. I love it too much. Can you build a bris? Can you build a bris with Hashem? On a very personal level, at a historical level, it's two words, but then it's really hard, and I don't want to simplify it. I don't want you to think, oh, here he goes. It's hard. It's going to be work. It's mental work. But it's a shift to say, Hashem, I'm in. I'm in. I was in high school. I was a nice, firm kid. I wasn't going anywhere, but, you know, I wasn't in. I wasn't fully in. I was, you know, like a kid. I was more, now I'm in. I'm on your side now. I'll sometimes have better times. I'll sometimes have worse times. I'll sometimes make you happier with me and make you less happy. When you sin, you're still with Hashem. Some of my deepest moments with HaKadosh Baruch Hu was when I utterly failed myself. But I didn't feel like I was going anywhere. I didn't feel like he was going anywhere. I just felt, I'm in. I'm part of Jewish history. I'm part of Am Yisrael. I'm part of my legacy. I hope I'll be able to rise to that occasion and meet his expectations. But I'm not going anywhere. And it gives you a confidence and a sturdiness and a stability, and every day is, that's the difference between, there's no other way to read this. There's nothing that happens between Avram and Avram other than the Bris Milah. Now I'm sure there's metaphysical aspects to Bris Milah. I'm not here to talk metaphysics only because I want to teach you how to grow. Right now, you're not living metaphysical lives. You're living emotional, developmental, rational lives. So if you're trying to slice or fillet the parasha of Avram, that's our takeaway. How to undergo a bris. You all want a bris milah. It's not about a bris milah. Too young to undergo it, to understand what a bris is. But now you're mature. Now you can understand, well, what does it mean to have commitment? It's a hard word in today's world because people aren't committed to jobs. Face it, none of you are going to work. Most of you are not going to work more than 3-4 years at a job. It's a very liquid professional environment. Better or worse economically, one of the areas in life that taught people commitment and grounded you is you show up to the same job, like you read about your grandparents with a lunch basket, and you say hello to your employer, hi Maggie, hi Jim, hi, every day, hi Maggie, hi Jim, hi Maggie. You kill you, but it also grounded you. And you lived in the same community that your parents lived in, shopped at the same grocery store. Everyone on this side, look at everyone on this side. They have a little more of that than you have. Because most of the boys on this side, from Melbourne, from Johannesburg, that's more of your feel. They're diving in the same shul, their parents diving in, they're shopping in the same supermarket. Better or worse. It could create prevention. You don't want to be provincial. You want to be exposed. But it could also create a lot of... You guys are living in quicksand. Seriously, you're moving around, getting on planes, moving from community to community, building shuls, taking down shuls. It's hard to feel. One of the crises in faith is everything that grounds you to something is gone. Professions, the carousel. Communities, let's rotate. Let's move around. Marriages, sadly, you see how marriages are eroding. So when you take a world in which the three pivots that create constancy and permanence are all being moved, it's hard to build religious identity because that's what religious identity is built on. Hashem, wherever I am, you are. Wherever state I'm in, you're there. Whatever, it doesn't make a difference. I mean, more than it's a confidence. It's a confidence. Ultimately, that's what a healthy marriage gives you, is a confidence. It's a person in this world that's sticking by you with the rolling pin, thick and thin, thick and thin. It gives you confidence. I may have more success than this or less, but when I come home at night, there's that person that I'm able to share, and I'm able to grow with, I'm able to confide, and I'm able to. That's why you read Lech Lecha the way I read Lech Lecha. Three rules. Don't say the word chet ever unless the Risho and the Gemara says it. Number two, there's a difference between chet and errors in judgment. Was Avram's not involved in the war chet? No, I'm sure he was learning a lot of Torah during that time. But you could question whether, was Avram's decision to let Lot go a chet? No. But it's hard to read Lot's disappearing act to Las Vegas. It's hard to read it. And then finally, while you're reading it that way, if you're reading it just so that, okay, so that I don't have to be better than I am, because Avram also had his flaws, so we're all just relative. And I don't think it's what Hashem intends when he wrote the Torah. Hashem didn't write the Torah so you don't have to come to me tomorrow. I think Hashem wrote the Torah so that you can be a better of it, Hashem. As far as I know, that's the reason Hashem wrote the Torah. So if there are ways he wants us to read it that way, it's not to read them as lesser people, it's to read them as greater people and more heroic people because they overcame limitation, because they triumphed, because they evolved. Now how can I evolve? And I'll be lucky if by the end of my life I evolved to the first letter of Lech Lecha. So not about trying to evolve to be the Avram of Leah. I'll be happy with the Lamed. But at least structurally, I could think about some of the things that Avram went through when he doesn't have a bris, and some of the things he went through when he does have a bris, and then reduce it to my little amoeba level and say, well, my challenge is, how can I draw on the bris that I feel I'm living with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and be better because of it? How can I make that bris more a part of my life? How can I feel that sense I'm in more deeply and let that steady and buoy, like a buoy in the ocean, and buoy so it doesn't really sink, and buoy myself. So it may shake, it may teeter, it may move, but it never sinks. How can I be a boy? B-O-U-Y. Okay. Good title for your next nephew. How can I be a boy? What is he talking about? Everyone will come. Oh, he's throwing something controversial. Yes, you have to listen.
I will.
No, only because I don't want you